Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast. I am your host, Sherry and Sade. There is plenty to dig into today, so we're going to start with an article about the Princess Diana and the phone pest story. And don't worry, if you haven't heard that story, I'm going to share it here, so don't worry about missing anything. I'm going to get you up to speed. And how that story links to both Rupert Murdoch and Piers Morgan, but also it links them to the criminal media nexus of police corruption. We're going there. This article is published by the Byline Times, and it's even written by its CEO and co-founder, Peter Jukes. So I am fully invested. Following that, we're going to be talking about how Kate Middleton's cancer diagnosis and the story that erupted from that. The BBC has come under fire for excessive coverage, and a member of the Royal Rota even published their own account of what it's been like to cover the royals throughout the recent fiery scandals. We're going to get into all of that. But what has bothered me the most is the way several major news publications have attempted to redirect the negative press back to Prince Harry by declaring that he should feel guilty for things that he said about Kate in Spare. Now, y'all know Spare is his memoir. I recapped it, but we have referenced it several times on this podcast as well as on my YouTube. We talked about Spare extensively, and not one item of information that was written in Spare has come out to be non-factual, most of which hasn't even been contested. That should tell you something. And lastly, we're going to take a look at an InStyle report claiming that Charles has regrets about how he and the prince, and I was about to say the Princess of Wales, the Princess of Wales, Princess Diana, raised their sons. First of all, to indirectly place blame on a deceased person. Not only that, but a woman who gave her all to her sons to make sure that they had everything she had, but also to make sure they had everything she didn't, is cruel. And yet another notch in the Charles the Cruel belt. We're going to get into all of that and more, so let's get started. All right, welcome back, y'all. I love that intro. That has become my jam. I also have some good news today that I have to share, but I have to wait until the end of this first topic. But I want to start off by saying thanks to everyone who is watching along on Patreon. Hey, y'all. Y'all like the shirt, A Home for Respect? I'm still wearing my Invictus Games Dusseldorf gear. I love it. And this made an excellent workout shirt the other day. And when I washed it, it came out of the wash so soft and smooth. You know, this is cotton, and it came out so soft, and I wore it again. About 4 days later. I wore this 4 days ago at the gym. But anyway, I just wanted to compliment it because it is very well made. And y'all know I love stuff on the sleeve, and they got the Invictus Games on the sleeve. So anyway, every time I wear this shirt, somebody stops me at the gym and it says something like either, oh, wow, you went to the Invictus Games, or you support the Invictus Games. Or some people even ask, like, now, what is that? I've seen you wear that shirt. What is that? Because I have this, a gray one and a white one. And I'm always happy to stop and spread the knowledge. So anyway, I had to wear it in the video today. I did not even bother doing my hair, y'all. For those of you on Patreon, y'all see my workout bun. I was like, girl, you all right. You just wear it on the video. That's fine. Everybody's fine. But anyway, we're going to get into the first story because I made this one first. Although it's not super positive, it is about Princess Diana. And y'all know I stan Princess Diana. I love her. And so anytime I get a chance to talk about her, I'm always happy to do so. But this story actually kind of caught me by surprise, and not in a good way. So we are well aware of some of the things that both Harry and Meghan faced, not only from the media, but the royal family. And we're also well aware of what Princess Diana faced, some of what Princess Diana faced. And I fear that even what she shared in her biography, which was not quote, authorized, but she did participate in it. And it's Diana, Her True Story in Her Own Words by Andrew Morton. She participated in it, but at the time she was still married to Prince Charles and still a member of the royal family. And so she had to do so covertly. And so she would give him information via tapes and then have to sneak those tapes to him. So everything is in her own words. And she also secretly authorized several members of her family, as well as several friends who really knew her, to give information to Andrew Morton. And he disclosed all of this in the, I think it's the prologue, but it could be the epilogue of his, of her biography. So he can't actually call it authorized, because at the time she had to deny that she participated in it, because she was just that transparent. And so, although we have a lot of the story from that, we don't have everything. And it feels like every year or every 24 months, we'll get information about more things that she endured and experienced, and how deep the corruption actually went, and how deep behind the scenes the web of deceit and secrecy gaslighting her really went, and how intricate that web was. And it always just makes me so sad, because this is a woman who was very self-aware. She was actually way too hard on herself, but she was an extremely self-aware person. And the level of gaslighting she experienced, not only from the royal family, but the media as well, it really could have driven her mad. And she just stayed steadfast and dedicated to documenting her experience and being very honest and transparent and sharing with friends and sharing with family. And had she not been so diligent in that, we might not know the true horrors that she truly did face. It's kind of hard for a lot of people to see a princess. And I'll be honest, to see a princess, a beautiful person, a person with a lot of privilege, a lot of wealth, who doesn't overtly work, like they don't have like a day-to-day job. And it's hard to feel bad for that person. It is really hard to feel bad for a person who is complaining from the inside of palace walls. And I get it. I get why people feel that way. But as any person will tell you, money is money, but happiness is something totally different. And in the midst of all of that, abuse can still occur. And no one, no matter how much money they have, no matter how much notoriety they have, no matter how well known they are, how much acclaim they have, no one deserves to be abused. No one deserves to be taken advantage of. No one deserves to be manipulated. And to know that in every phase of Diana's life, she was mistreated in some way after her time in the royal family, she was mistreated in some way, and in a lot of ways, actually, and how she had to work double time to try and maintain a front despite what she was enduring behind the scenes. I mean, people in her family knew about the infidelity for years and made fun of her for being affected by it. I mean, there's a lot. And we went through this when we recapped Diana, Her True Story in Her Own Words. So feel free to check some of those out. They are up on Patreon now, or at least they should be. I'll double check after this podcast goes up. But I say that to say, today was one of those days where I learned something new about the level of corruption and deceit going on behind Princess Diana's back, and how deep that went, and how some of the people who were part of that are still active members of the media today and are still very close to members of the royal family, despite it coming out how closely or how invested they were in abusing Princess Diana. Now, I knew part of today's story. I knew about the phone pest, quote unquote phone pest story, but the extra details that were just shared in Byline Times today or yesterday taught me something new. And that is exactly why I read the Byline Times. And it's also why I invest in them. So we're going to get in the first topic. And we're going to be reading an article from the Byline Times. Now, for those of you who are on Patreon, you're going to be able to see the article that we're reading. But for those of you on the podcast, no worries, you will hear it. So let's get started with reading this article. It's titled, Princess Diana, Phone Pest Story Links Both Rupert Murdoch and Piers Morgan to the Criminal Media Nexus of Police Corruption. An amended claim by Prince Harry in the High Court puts both the interviewer and newspaper mogul in the spotlight. And this is actually written by their co-founder and CEO, Peter Jukes. He wrote this himself. And so let's get into it. So again, here is Piers Morgan with Rupert Murdoch. Y'all want to know something that's kind of funny? I have never really looked at Rupert Murdoch in the face. I feel like he's always existed as kind of an enigma. but I've never actually looked at him in the face. So seeing him, he kind of looks like Burns. What's his name? Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. No offense to him at all. Just a little connection I made. Wait a minute. Is that supposed to be based on him? I doubt it. There's several, you know, billionaires or multimillionaires who kind of look like this. Maybe it's not. All right, let's continue. A newly pleaded document submitted by Prince Harry's legal team last month as part of his ongoing case against Rupert Murdoch's newspapers for privacy intrusion sheds more light on what former Prime Minister Gordon Brown called the criminal media nexus of journalists, private investigators, and corrupt cops during the heyday of the tabloids. Put it all out there then. In an amended claim over alleged unlawful information gathering in the case of His Royal Highness, Duke of Sussex versus News Group Newspapers, the claimants have lodged a notorious News of the World front page, dated August 21st, 1994, carrying an exclusive story alleging that Princess Diana was a phone pest. And here it is. It says, Di's cranky phone calls to married Oliver, a world exclusive. All right. The story can only have come from police sources and so implicates both the then editor of the now defunct News of the World, Piers Morgan, his then chief crime reporter, now editor of the Express, Gary Jones, and the proprietor, Rupert Murdoch himself, in the roaring trade between the tabloids and corrupt police officers. At the center of it all, and at the center of many of the ongoing civil claims against both Murdoch's newspapers, Mirror Group, and Mail titles, is the role of the information, or excuse me, infamous detective agency, Southern Investigations, and the murder of its co-founder, Daniel Morgan. Whew. That's a lot. But before we continue with the Byline Times article, I did promise that I would share the phone pest story so that you would be fully up to speed as far as what they are actually talking about. So I'm actually going to switch over to the LA Times. You'll still be seeing the Byline Times article on your screen, but I'm just pulling a little bit of an excerpt from the Los Angeles Times, which was published in real time. Now, this article was written August 23rd, 1994, or it was published August 23rd, 1994, and it was published to the Los Angeles Times. It's linked in the description box below. And here is what it says. It kind of sums up the phone pest story pretty neatly. So that's why I picked this one. And it was in real time. I kind of find that to be pretty cool. Media reports say Oliver Hoare, a close friend of Diana and Charles, complained to police last October about a stream of nuisance calls. Each time he answered, no one spoke at the other end. Hoare, an expert in Islamic art, worried that he might be the target of Middle East extremists, but investigators were said to have traced the calls to Diana's private apartments, her mobile phone, a line at her sister's house, and even some public phone booths. Diana, denying she ever made any of the calls, told the tabloid, quote, "You cannot be serious. I don't even know how to use a parking meter, let alone a phone box." So that is the story in a nutshell of the phone pest. So let's get into the rest of this article. The next section is police and tabloid corruption. Daniel Morgan was alleged to have been investigating police corruption when he was axed to death in a South London pub car park in March of 1987. His business partner, Jonathan Rees, was the prime suspect. Rees was arrested a few weeks later, along with one of the lead detectives on the initial murder inquiry. Oh my God. Detective Sergeant Sid Fillery. At the inquest into Morgan's death in 1988, evidence emerged that Rees and Fillery had colluded in covering up the murder. By this point, Fillery had retired from the Metropolitan Police and taken Morgan's place at the detective agency. Southern Investigations was now on its way to becoming a one-stop shop for the dark arts of unlawful news gathering for the tabloids. Whew. Throughout the late 1980s and early 1990s, Southern Investigations became the main hub for selling confidential personal and financial information to the press obtained by phone tapping, burglary, covert surveillance, and computer hacking. Its major purchaser was Alex Marunchak. I'm so sorry. I have tried to find this being said on video several times so that I could try to figure out how to pronounce this. I am going to give it my best bet. Again, if this is a distraction, please feel free to skip this episode. I definitely don't want to distract you with my mispronunciation if that is what it is. But I'm trying my best and I just want to get to the story. So again, I'm trying my best. Its major purchaser was Alex Marunchak, news editor of the News of the World. Reese and Fillory were also instrumental in training up a raft of Fleet Street journalists in subterfuge and surveillance, the most notable of which was Mazhar Mahmood, the Sunday tabloid's famous fake sheik. One of the main sources of both this illicit information and the techniques for gathering it was a network of corrupt police officers in southeast London. The trade was so extensive, the CID in the area was known as the News of the World Regional Crime Squad. Oh my goodness, they didn't even try to hide it. Reese and Fillory's close relationship with organized crime and the firm within a firm of corrupt Met police officers saw them engaged in a roaring trade with News International. But even if the amounts of money siphoned off to Southern investigations didn't attract the attention of the company's proprietor, Rupert Murdoch, the political dimensions of their dark arts surely would have. I can imagine they would have. So before we continue, I just discovered something pretty cool about the Byline Times. It will actually, I've seen other news websites do this too, but I didn't realize Byline Times did it as well. So I actually just realized that it's pronounced Marinchek. Because you can click on the line and it'll read it to you. So that's how the Byline Times pronounced it. So I'm going to pronounce it Arinchek.
Reese and Fillory were also instrumental in training up. Its right major purchaser was Alex Marinchek.
Marinchek. So that's how I'm going to proceed. I just wanted to share that in case you haven't been on their website and you don't want to read through all of it, it'll read it to you. When the then Culture Secretary David Meller suggested in 1991 that the popular press is drinking in the Last Chance Saloon, Southern investigations set up the surveillance and bugging devices to expose him in an extramarital affair. Reese and Fillory were also instrumental in the brokering of letters stolen from Patty Ashdown's solicitor, showing that the Liberal Democrat leader had also once had an extramarital affair. The information was revealed just before the 1992 general election. Quite timely, I would say. In effect, Southern investigations and Alex Marinchek were becoming masters of politically targeted. What is that? Oh, let's see.
In effect, Southern investigations and Alex Marinchek were becoming masters of politically targeted compromat. Yeah.
Okay, compromat. I just learned a new word. Politically targeted compromat years before the Russian term was well known. But where do Piers Morgan and Express editor Gary Jones fit in? And what did Rupert Murdoch know? Well, enter the phone pest story. It says the following is an edited extract from Who Killed Daniel Morgan, which I co-authored with Daniel Morgan's brother, Alastair Morgan. I remember that. We covered that on my YouTube. But it will be linked in this article. And it's all this article is linked below in the description box if you want to check it out yourself. It's very good. Piers Morgan took over the editorship of the News of the World at the age of 28 in February of 1994, at the height of the tabloid frenzy around the breakup of the marriage of Princess Diana and Prince Charles. How convenient, considering how his career has turned out and what he's focused on. I find that to be quite interesting that that's when his career took off as well. Morgan's only journalistic experience to date was pinning the bizarre celebrity column at The Sun. He appointed an even younger Rebecca Brooks to become features editor that spring. Given his inexperience with reporting, Morgan relied heavily on the older guard at the newspaper, especially his then news editor, Alex Marinchek, whom he described as having a deadpan, half-Ukrainian, mustachioed visage. Okay. Marinchek's police sources would soon land Morgan in trouble. Y'all, look at his legs. Have y'all noticed, before we go to the next paragraph, Piers Morgan is built a lot like Trump, and he stands like Trump as well. They both have that little awkward, don't know what to do with my limbs disposition. They have that big old head on them little weird shoulders. No offense to anybody I'm talking about. Let me stop. Let's continue. There's a million and one things to say about myself as well. So let's stop. In his autobiography, The Insider, Morgan explains how in August of 1994, Marinchek and chief crime reporter Gary Jones walked into the editor's office in Wapping and explained, quote, "Got rather a big one here, boss. Diana's a phone pest." Marinchek went on to elaborate, quote, "The cops are investigating hundreds of calls she has made to a married art dealer called Oliver Hoare." Jones backed up his news editor with a readout from the police report, which he then quoted verbatim. You hear that? He had the police report. And it seems like he had it exclusively before this became public knowledge. He had it. Yeah, this is a scoop. It seems like he has this. I might be using the wrong journalistic term, but he has, it seems like he has an exclusive. That's quite interesting. Hoare had received hundreds of silent, anonymous phone calls and reported them to the police. With the help of British Telecom, the police had traced the calls to Kensington Palace, the home of Princess Diana. Now, how many people live at Kensington Palace? When Hoare was informed of the source of the calls, he told police officers that he and his wife were friends with Charles and Diana and had been, and he had been, according to the police report, consoling her and becoming quite close to her after her separation from the then heir to the throne. The News of the World called the antique dealer for comment. Hoare did not deny there had been a police investigation. Under the bylines of Gary Jones and royal reporter Clive Goodman, the News of the World splashed the story over the front and four inside pages. The details and the exclusive could have only come from the police documents. The date of Hoare's first complaint, the involvement of BT's Specialist Nuisance Calls Bureau, the special code BT was given to trace the calls, the activation of the code on January 13, 1994, transcripts of six silent calls, and then the tracing equipment which linked the calls to a private number used by Prince Charles. All of this detailed information could have only been sourced from police. Wow. And if you are on Patreon, you are seeing this directly. This one, in, it looks like the inside says she called three times in 9 minutes and hung up as she heard Oliver's voice. And police follow phone trail to her bedroom. Now, how did they do that? Huh? Oh, by the phone number. Does. But anyway, that's quite interesting. And look at this photo. Where is this photo from? Because that looks like it's through a window. Y'all see what I mean when I say that they were using long camera lenses to get very indecent photos of Princess Diana. They got some with like her bathroom window was open and she was in a towel once and she was walking past the window and somebody got a photo of her there. Her relationship with the paparazzi was always so toxic. Well, I should say their relationship with her was always so toxic, even here where they're trying to implicate her in some kind of indecent story or whatever. They're still using photos that look indecent and unfair to her. The next day, in a long interview in the Daily Mail, or shall I say the Daily Fail, Princess Diana denied the story. Good for her. Piers Morgan began to worry that he had made a huge career blunder. Oh, don't worry. Your career is a lot more tawdry after this moment. There were calls for him to resign. Marinchek tried to reassure the News of the World editor by telling him, "We've had the report read to us. She's lying." But Morgan still feared that the document could be a forgery. Quote, "I felt sick to the pit of my stomach," Morgan recalled. "In the Insider, I couldn't eat or even drink a cup of tea. It was hellish." God forbid you don't get your Earl Grey. Oh, my God. The enamel on your teeth are probably very appreciative for the little break they got. Now, the next section is what Murdoch knew. Now, this is where we get into how Murdoch was part of all this. The only thing that finally put Morgan's mind at rest was a call from his proprietor, Rupert Murdoch. It says, "Hi, Piers," Murdoch said. "I can't really talk for long, but I just wanted you to know that your story is 100% bang on. Can't tell you how I know, but I just know." He then instructed his editor to get on TV and tell the world that Princess Diana is a liar and to promise more material in the Sunday tabloid the following week. Yikes. Though relieved, Morgan couldn't help but admitting to Murdoch that he didn't have any more material. Murdoch replied, quote, "Oh, you will have some by Sunday. Don't worry. Gotta go. Good luck." How had Murdoch independently verified the story? It was Alex Marinchek who had seen the police report. Would the proprietor have checked with his veteran news editor? I mean, I would assume that too, but keep listening. At the Levinson Inquiry into the Practices, Culture, and Ethics of the Press in 2012, following the exposure of the phone hacking scandal the year before, Murdoch explicitly denied even remembering meeting Marinchek. But in careful legal language guarding against any surviving photos, he added, "I might have shaken hands walking through the office." I just find it odd that you wouldn't know one of the news editors. By that point, Marinchek had served in a number of senior roles at the News of the World, from his first days in the Wapping dispute, attending parties with the News International CEO and senior police officers, to being made editor of the Irish edition 2 decades later. Steve Grayson, a freelance photographer who worked at the Sunday tabloid in the late 1990s, recalls Marinchek explicitly saying that he had a direct call from Murdoch on one occasion. Despite his growing global influence, there is also no doubt that during this era, Murdoch himself still called senior management at the newspaper most Friday or Saturday nights to check what stories were coming up. And there's more evidence that Murdoch was well aware of the existence of Marinchak, who had served his company for more than 25 years. You really expect us to not think you know someone who's worked for you for 25 years and held a number of senior positions, but including editor? Come on. I mean, to be involved in the things he's involved with, he's a terrible liar. Well, maybe not, because he hasn't faced any consequences yet that I can see. So maybe he's not so bad a liar. In correspondence from September of 1997, the then Taoiseach of Ireland, Bertie Ahern, wrote personally to Murdoch to thank him for the news of the world's coverage of the country's general election. He said he particularly appreciated the very professional approach of your associate editor, Alex Marinchak. Ahern even asked Murdoch to pass on, quote, my thanks and best wishes to Alex. So clearly he knew of that man. I don't even know why we're entertaining the thought that he might not have known he was there. Murdoch replied on September 30th of 1997, I shall be delighted to pass on your comments. So was there like a random like doorman named Alex? And he was just like, oh yeah, by the way, like, come on, get out of here. You knew who that man was. Whatever Murdoch's uncertain memories of Alex Marinchak, the ultimate source of Piers Morgan's scoop was a confidential police file. Later, Morgan was careful to say that the source wasn't a serving police officer, partly because that would have opened him and any police officer up to criminal charges. He always just skirts by. Nobody was censured or sanctioned for the phone pest story. In fact, it was quite the opposite. Gary Jones went on to win the Press Gazette's Reporter of the Year, partly due to his News of the World exclusive about Diana's anonymous calls. Criticized by the then Press Complaints Council for another intrusive royal splash, Morgan would leave the Murdoch Sunday tabloid in 1995 and take up an even more senior position editing its rival, the Daily Mirror. He would soon bring over Jones and with him the dark arts of Sid Fillery and Jonathan Rhys. Now, before we continue, I have to say, y'all know what I find to be crazy is that recently there has been like 7 or 8 articles that came out this week, actually, that have been kind of like Prince Harry's cases are drawing to a close or nearing to a close or losing steam or losing momentum. They are really trying to convince the public that Prince Harry's lawsuits aren't developing in his favor. And we're seeing as more information comes out, they actually are. A lot of the information that's coming out are affirming his claims as well as the claims of the other claimants in the case with him, in some of the cases with him. So I find it to be interesting that, of course, if you poke fun, or not poke fun, but if you poke at the media and expose the media, they're going to hit back. They're trying to sway the public perception, which again is one of the reasons why we should all be concerned at how they are operating. If they are using their platforms, which should be unbiased, and reporting the news, not creating the news, or even worse, making up the news, then instead of doing that, they are using their platform to target and harass one or two people or just anybody. We should all be very concerned about that. That's very dangerous. That is how a lot of atrocities in this world have born. I'm just saying, pay attention to this. Anyway, the next section and the last section is ongoing trials. While the judge has not ruled whether Prince Harry's claims can date back to 1994 and the targeting of his mother, the evidence of Gary Jones's relationship with Southern Investigations has already been heard in the case of the Duke of Sussex and other claimants against Mirror Group newspapers. The judge in that case, Justice Fancourt, concluded that Piers Morgan, as editor of the Mirror newspapers, must have known about phone hacking and other unlawful information gathering. Call it out, Justice Fancourt. Meanwhile, similar evidence is due to be heard in the pending claims by Prince Harry and others, including Baroness Doreen Lawrence, in claims against the publishers of The Mail and Mail on Sunday. According to the particulars of claim issued so far, Associated Newspapers also procured the services of private investigators included in illicit information, including allegations that Southern Investigations were involved in targeting the family of Stephen Lawrence, murdered by a racist gang connected to the Southeast London underworld in 1993. Like the tabloids used to say, this story will run and run. Now, again, this was written by Peter Jukes. He is the CEO, co-founder, and executive editor of the Byline Times. Let me give you my thoughts. So I want to start by saying I appreciate the Byline Times for digging deep to find the truth. They are one of very few news sources who are operating as they should, as they were created to. Their integrity and moral correctness, is why I trust them outright. And I think more news sources need to kind of take more news platforms need to take note and follow suit. But we have talked about Rupert Murdoch and his ways, as well as Piers Morgan, plenty of times. So I don't have to go through all the examples of why I'm not a fan of either of them. I'll just say it like that. But I'm glad all of this is being unmasked. As more facts are revealed, not only do they amplify Prince Harry's claims, but they also paint a very clear picture of how deep the harassment of Princess Diana truly ran. The media worked overtime to abuse Princess Diana for a story, and the royals worked twice as hard to gaslight her into thinking if she would simply become a robot, it would all just go away. And they knew, as well as we now know, that that was not the case. Truth of the matter is, none of it was in her control. As the family scapegoat, conveniently distracting from Prince Charles's many scandals, including his not-so-secret affair with the now queen consort Camilla and media punching bag, Diana could have achieved perfection on a cellular level, and they would still have bashed her for having too many cells. It was never ending, and shame on them for their misdeeds. I also find it to be horrific that anyone in the royal family still maintains any sort of relationship with Piers, including the York sisters. However, the fact that Piers allegedly keeps company with Camilla makes perfect sense. And by keeps company means like they're in the same circle, they chat from time to time, they run into each other, and they have pleasantries. We do know that she's invited him to events before recently in 2022, as well as Jeremy Clarkson. So it's horrific to me, but it does make sense. They're both low-down, dirty, trout-mouth vermin. And, I mean, to say it in no uncertain terms, and in my humble opinion, they deserve to be friends. They make sense as friends. Pierce is such a fan of Camilla's that he purchased one of her paintings and hung it up in his office. And at the time, it was the only painting of hers ever sold. I mean, it just seems like he idolizes her. But I don't know either of them personally. So obviously, I'm just speaking on what is reported. But it just seems like he idolizes one of the most famous side chicks in history. And just depending on who he is and what he's shown, I'm not surprised that that's somebody he would take up company with at all. I'm not surprised by either of them. As Prince Harry's legal quest surge on, we can definitely expect more information to come to light. And I'm on standby. It's also a reminder of what Princess Diana truly dealt with, which is why I wanted to dedicate my first podcast live stream to her, her life and how her legacy lives on through Prince Harry. So you heard me right. My first podcast live stream will be on Monday, April 22nd, 2024 at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It's a Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Y'all know that's what we've always done, and we will continue to do that. I have included the link below in the description box for you to join my live stream. You will be able to chat live with myself and one another, as well as call in if you would like. Now, this is not a visual live stream. It is an audio live stream. So think of it as calling into a radio show or a show that streams on your phone. You can call in. I think that's so cool. I have never done a live stream in that way, and I cannot wait to do it. And of course, Patreon, you will get a recording of that with visuals to aid you. I will still be recording for Patreon. So I cannot wait. Again, that's Monday, April 22nd at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to announce it on YouTube, of course, because that's where a lot of people just kind of live. And that's where they found my content. So I try to go to them to bring them over to see my Patreon or listen to my podcast, however you choose to take in my content. And I'm also going to be posting this on my website, SharianSade.com. So wherever you are, I'm going to try to find you so that if you're interested in a live stream, you can be part of it. I'm so excited about that. And I cannot wait to dedicate my first live stream to Princess Diana. It's only right. So for our next topic, I'm going to be reading from In Style, and it's titled Prince Harry Reportedly Feels More Spare Than Ever, According to Royal Expert. And this is written by Christopher Liu. So I'm going to skip all of this. Y'all know they kind of go through the what's been going on with the royals that would have led him to feel this way. But I kind of want to share where they get into the meat and potatoes. And then I'm going to give you why I picked this article to talk about. It says, quote, first of all, let's find out who the royal expert is. Let's go up to the front. I don't really trust any of these royal experts, to be honest. Even several of them who have worked with like Princess Diana and Charles or whatever in their earlier careers have come out to say really terrible things about Harry or Meghan, and they feel like because they knew Diana or Charles that they know every member of the royal and they're certified to speak. The only people who speak for Harry and Meghan are Harry and Meghan. And we will know when they have something to say. So it's royal historian and quote expert, Dr. Tessa Dunlop. So it says, quote, Harry and Meghan posited themselves as the alternative to royalty, the couple who believed in service outside monarchy. They encouraged us to look at them as an American version of royalty light. Their children are prince and princess, Dunlop shared with The Mirror. All their branding nudges us towards sideways glances between the House of Montecito and the House of Windsor. I don't look at the House of Montecito, sideways at all. I see Harry and Meghan doing what they do. That's it. No need to read any more into that. They haven't posited themselves as anti or alternative royalty. They have literally positioned themselves as Harry and Meghan, founders of Archwell Foundation and Archwell Productions, and all of the amazing works that has flowed through them, through those organizations and them themselves. So that's all. We don't have to try to act like they're trying to rival the royal. They kind of not even really considering the royals. They're just kind of doing their own thing. They're doing the work is really where their focus is. Anyway, y'all, I try to leave my opinion for the end. I'm not really doing so hot at that. Let me get back to that. The expert continued, saying that Meghan's upcoming lifestyle brand may cause an even bigger rift between the royals, especially as she leans into the California vibes. If that matters to the royals, with everything else that's going on, with the fact that they have a major housing crisis, with the fact that they have major financial crisis for the majority of their citizens, they have so much else. Two of their senior royals have cancer. Meghan's American Riviera Orchard or any other business or venture that she embarks on or Harry embarks on should not be of major concern to them. It just simply should not be. Meghan touching base with things that she has always loved, food, fashion, you know, just all the cool things that we talk. We've already been through what we know so far about American Riviera Orchard. We've talked about that. Meghan doing anything that is not politically charged should not concern the royals. And even the things that she's done that have been politically charged have been fantastic things that actually advance the name and the reputation of the royals. They should appreciate her for bringing them into modern times by simply associating with her. Being associated with Meghan has been the best thing the royals could have done because no one was talking about them beforehand. No one was thinking about them. And the moment they were even just slightly associated with her, it gave them a lot more of a progressive and modern look, something that they were desperately in need of. And both times they've had that opportunity, they failed miserably. They lost Princess Diana and they lost Princess Meghan. And they are struggling in light of everything that they have done to both her and Harry and those babies. And instead of just simply being upright and trying to fix it and trying to work through it and trying to build a bridge, they have done nothing but show themselves to be the problems that we already knew they were. They have done very little to disprove anything that Harry and Meghan have ever said. And their poor attempts at swaying the media have exposed them even more. They are the epitome of stop while you're behind, not ahead. Stop while you're behind. But let's continue. You know, it just really bothers me because what is California? They have never had a problem with Meghan's California vibes. First and foremost, her first outfit that she wore when they essentially came out as a couple at the Invictus Games, when Harry and Meghan came out, the boyfriend jeans, the husband shirt, the flats, the bag, her hairstyle, her makeup, all of that was approved beforehand. Harry let us know that he confirmed that that was approved beforehand. Didn't stop people from attacking her for having ripped jeans, but that was approved beforehand. The palace knew full well who they were getting and what came with Meghan. And clearly they liked it because Harry got permission to marry her. And we all watched that glorious wedding. Dunlop added that all eyes are on the Sussexes as they head to the UK this summer and that Harry and Meghan have to tread carefully as they navigate their time abroad. I said I was going to stop trying. I was going to try to stop interrupting, but I feel something about that. Tread lightly feels like a threat to me, and maybe I'm just dramatic, but that feels like a threat because tread lightly for what? Tread lightly for what? What have they done wrong? Not a damn thing. The people who need to be treading lightly are the people who have been trying to bamboozle the world for the past 3 months. You need to be eliciting these threats to the royal family, not to Harry and Meghan. Y'all get on my nerves with this, but let's continue. She goes on to say, Duchess Meghan is using more than a touch of regal glamour to brand her new site, American Riviera Orchard. Meanwhile, Harry is the self-identifying royal spare, Dunlop continued. And in the wake of his sister-in-law's health revelations, I expect he feels more spare than ever. The Sussexes must plan their next public move with extreme care. The timing and optics matter like never before. So I want to go back to Dunlop's comment. The timing and optics matter like never before. Did you elicit this advice to the royals whose optics are literally being challenged by every major news and photo agency in the world? Getty Images just put up an editor's note for Kate's cancer video, her cancer disclosure video. Why aren't you giving her advice that the optics matter more than ever before? The whole video or the photo of Kate in the car with her mother is contested that was even her because the car had 5 wheels. But optics matter like never before. are we just going to ignore the fact that they hired allegedly a body double to walk outside of the farm shop? But optics matter like never before. So I would say that since optics matter like never before, Dunlop needs to turn her advice to the people who are trying to bamboozle the world, not to Harry and Meghan, who are literally just living their life. They don't have to plan their steps around the rest of the royals. The royals need to do what they need to do. They need to use their platform for some good. They need to commit to work. Has Dunlop even considered the level of the lack of work that's coming out of the royals right now? How everybody's taking a break, either sick, taking a break, or stepping back. There are literally, 1-2 senior working royals right now? Why don't you talk to them about what the optics and how much they matter like never before and what that impact could be? Talk to them. Don't talk to Harry and Meghan, who's, in my opinion, their media game is on point. We don't get leaks. We don't really even get any bad press except for by the UK tabloids and people like Dunlop, of course, because that's going to happen no matter what Harry and Meghan do. They could literally cure cancer, cure AIDS, end world hunger, and then Dunlop and people like her would still be like, but they should have done it sooner. So like they would have, you know, they would. That's why these kind of people don't matter. But this narrative is actually taking hold, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. Spare was, I don't know how long ago it was written, but it was published over a year ago, a year and 4 months. Well, a year and 3 and some change. April 10th will be 4 months, a year and 4 months. And I find it to be quite odd that a memoir, a book that came out so long ago and has been as widely dissected as it has. And Harry has done a lot of press supporting the book and standing by every single word, every vowel, every consonant, every punctuation mark, every space, every paragraph. He stood by it 10 toes down and elaborated on whatever he was asked about. The fact that we've had all of this media and explanation around Spare been recapped over 1,000 times online, why are you now trying to rope new information that is literally 1 year older than the memoir itself into the memoir? Why in the hell would he care? Not saying that he doesn't care about Kate, but how would he connect his memoir, not only sharing his experiences with the royals, but his life experiences from the date of birth? He shared that with us in Spare. What the hell does that have to do with Kate and her cancer? Not a damn thing. And I don't like the fact that people are trying to guilt him into feeling bad. This is literally standard abuser behavior. It is how narcs operate. And it's so crazy to see this on a global scale because it's almost like they think we're dumb or they're just hoping we'll get tired of calling them out. Newsflash, the Sussex Squad is deep. Nobody's tired of calling you out. And if I get tired one day, somebody else gonna do it. And if they get tired, I'm gonna do it. And they gonna do it. There's too many people paying too close attention for you to get away with this bullshit. And I needed to stop. I wanted to stop because at the end of the day, Harry doesn't deserve, at the end of the day, do y'all not realize that man is human? That even though they've had their struggles, that Kate is still his sister-in-law, somebody he was very fond of before she showed her true colors. Do y'all not realize that his dad has cancer? How many people live in this world haven't had conflict with their parents? I want you to raise your hand right now because maybe I'm missing something. Have you never had conflict with your parents? Do you want them to die though? The majority of people are going to say no. The majority of people are going to say, yeah, I did have an issue with my dad, or I did have an issue with my mom, or my mom treated me this kind of way, or my dad treated me this kind of way. I still don't want him to have cancer. And so the news of my family having cancer is a struggle for me. And it's almost like the media wants us to believe that he is somewhere gloating. It's very sad. Or they paint one of two pictures. He's insensitive and gloating and thinking he's on top of the world because Kate and Charles have cancer. Or he's somewhere bedridden, doubting his relationship with Meghan, wishing that he hadn't married her, kind of wants back in, begging to be a working royal again, wants to be aligned, but is afraid of big Billy boss Meghan. They paint one of two pictures. I can assure you, neither of them are true. That man is doing and living exactly the way that he told us he was. He is doing what he said he was going to do. He is focused on what he said he was going to focus on. And we can see that through Sussex.com. And he is living the way that he said he wants to live. He literally said he loves America. Do not play with me right now. Well, that man is not guilty for anything. He didn't do a damn thing wrong. And narcs love doing this. Narcissists will do this thing where they will harm you intentionally too. They will harm you. And in most cases, go out of their way to harm you repeatedly, banking on your belief in them that of course they wouldn't do that. They're banking on you seeing them as you see yourself, meaning I wouldn't intentionally inflict harm. So clearly they're not doing it on purpose. Maybe if I can gain some understanding, maybe if I can explain how this is hurting me, and they rope you into that cycle of acting ambivalent to what they're doing and the impact of how they're hurting you. And they're like, oh, did that really hurt? So when I ran you over with that car, you're really telling me that hurt you. Okay. Listen, as a child of a narcissist, I can tell you they are narcissists. This behavior is narcissistic. And what they'll do is they'll inflict harm, oftentimes repeatedly, gaslight you. And then when you hold them accountable and say, hey, there's a boundary here, you can no longer do that, then they'll flip it and say, oh, this boundary, it feels a lot like an attack. You are attacking me, and now I'm the victim. Who are y'all trying to play with? Y'all have been abusing Harry from the very beginning, long before Meghan came into the picture. But when Meghan came into the picture and y'all saw a splash of color, oh my God, y'all lost your damn minds. Y'all went balls to the wall attacking those people and their kids. And their kids. And you expect for him to simply share his story, to not share his story, and then you expect him to feel bad if he does? That's how narcissists act. You told people how I treated you. And so that makes you the villain because it painted me in a bad light. Well, if they just pause right there and order their steps accordingly, they can make it to the right destination. You told people how I treated you. That wasn't a good, it didn't shine me in the best light. It didn't shine the best light on me. And that made people feel a way, or it made me look bad. And so you're the villain. If someone sharing a truthful experience about you shines you in a bad light, the crime isn't in the person who shared that story. The crime is in whatever the hell you did that shone you in a bad light. If you want to be remembered better, you have to behave better. If you want people to remember you differently, you have to treat people differently. And no, Kate having cancer is not about spare. And no, I don't think that Prince Harry feels any type of way about spare, because spare ain't got shit to do with this. Kate having cancer is a health issue that occurred a year after spare came out. You think Prince Harry wrote spare on January 9th, 2024 and released it January 10th, 2024? No, that book came out January 10th, 2023. We've had a year and 4 months with spare. We found out about Kate's cancer, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? And regardless of when we found it out, she found out about it in January of 2024, a full year after Spare came out. And let's just be very clear. Even if he had called her all kinds of names, this, that, and the other, why is that related to her cancer? It's not. If he had lied on her or mistreated her or disrespected her in some way, I could probably see some guilt. But y'all are trying to use her cancer diagnosis to absolve her of the very real things that she did, the very real actions that she committed and still commits up until what, a couple of months ago? Don't forget how last year y'all were trying to paint her as Big Billy Badass with the whole recollections may vary, how Kate hit back, how she won't succumb to the Sussexes. We sat there and watched her bully Megan at the walkabout in 2020 of the two. We saw her do all the things that she was spoken of, and they didn't even talk about the walkabout in Spare, but... And she released a statement after that, or not a real statement, but she leaked that was the hardest thing she ever had to do was spend time with Harry and Meghan at the walkabout. The hardest thing when the queen is sitting there lying in state. Now you can go over there. You did mourning the queen wasn't the hardest thing about that week, but being around Harry and Meghan was. You hated Harry and Meghan more than you love the queen. That should have been seen as a travesty that the wife of the heir to the throne cared more about hating family members, her in-laws, than she cared about mourning your queen. And y'all didn't say boo about it. Now, does any of that have anything to do with her cancer? No, but I can guarantee you, if Harry's focus is on anything related to Kate's cancer, it's on Kate getting better, because that's the kind of person he is. Now, if the tables were turned, God forbid, you know, every kind of story in the world will be trying to paint the Waleses in the best light. Y'all not even questioning the fact that y'all haven't seen those kids. You haven't even seen Kate, if we're being real, allegedly. You haven't even really seen Kate. But, you know, optics, right? Optics. If we're going to talk about optics, let's talk about the bench that Kate was sitting on and why the beams on the back of the bench are two different sizes on each side of her body, why the background doesn't move, why the music or the sounds of nature are played on a loop, why clearly AI is detecting or software is detecting a lot of AI in the video, which could be for a number of reasons, which we talked about. But since the conversation was optics when it came down to attacking Harry and Meghan, then let's keep the conversation on optics when we talk about the rest of the royal family. Why did they have Prince Andrew leading the charge on Easter? If we're going to talk about optics, let's talk about Easter. Thank you to Republic for calling out how disgusting it is that a man who's been accused and paid out a settlement for sex crimes he claims he did not commit. Why did that person lead the family into Easter? We want to talk about optics. We want to talk about optics. Let's talk about the fact that Prince William missed his own godfather's memorial 1 year after missing his funeral. So there's that. Yet he had time to be at a pub later that week. Optics, that looked terrible. So if Dunlop wants to offer her expertise to anybody, offer it to the flailing royals. Stop using Harry and Meghan as a life raft. You are ruining your own credibility, but I suspect you know that the monarchy is probably going to end soon and you really don't have any anyway. But that's just me. Y'all let me know what you think in the comment section below. So for our next topic, I'm just mowing through these topics, y'all. For our next topic, we're going to get into this one from Variety. Now, the title of this article is Kate Middleton, BBC responds to complaints about excessive and insensitive coverage of her cancer diagnosis. Now, this is written by Naman Ramachandran. I'm so sorry if I did not pronounce that correctly, but I try my best. The BBC has responded to complaints about its extensive coverage of the cancer diagnosis of Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales. Wait, if it's Kate, the Princess of Wales, wouldn't they drop the Middleton? Isn't that how it works? Kate, Princess of Wales? Am I wrong about that? Y'all let me know. Last month, Kate confirmed she has undergone treatment for cancer. In an emotional video, Middleton said that while her condition was originally thought to be non-cancerous, cancer was found in her system following the abdominal surgery, and she is now in the early stages of preventative chemotherapy. Now, the term preventative chemotherapy has been disputed by several medical doctors, and you can find that coverage online. You can also look back at some of my old episodes on Patreon or on this podcast where we did talk about it, and we played the clips of them calling into different stations and shows explaining why that term is not accurate. In response to the complaints, BBC said in a statement on Friday, "We broadcast in full the highly personal video message from the Princess of Wales in which she spoke directly to the public about her cancer diagnosis. Our coverage reflected the significance of this story and the outpouring of support for the princess from around the globe. We explained to our audience what was known about Catherine's condition, but did not speculate on details that had not been made public. Our reporting made clear that this is a difficult time for the princess and the rest of the royal family. We have been mindful at all times to approach our coverage with sensitivity. As part of our analysis, we examined the intense speculation there had been in the preceding weeks about the princess's health. We also reported on Catherine's request for privacy and detailed the statement from Kensington Palace regarding the princess having the right to privacy in relation to her medical issues. We always give careful consideration to the editorial decisions we make. While we have a responsibility to report on stories that are of interest to our audience, we appreciate that not everyone would have approved of the approach we took. What a great way to put that. I think the fact that people are saying it's insensitive, I'm not really sure what's insensitive about how the BBC handled it. As a matter of fact, I have found as of the last few years, the BBC have been more than accommodating to the royal family in a way that's like, y'all are like the long arm of the royals. They're like a media branch of the royal family. It's kind of weird now. The BBC, in my opinion, used to be a little bit more middle ground. They always showed the royals in like a nice light, but they never really shied away from truth or fact. But it just seems like now they're kind of just leaving that up to LBC. But anyway, what do y'all think about this? I wish that they hadn't even addressed it, because at the end of the day, it's the news of the day. So when people say, oh, you're covering Kate too much, nobody said that to me, thankfully. But when people say that to others, I've seen them say it to other squatty channels. I'm like, I mean, chances are if it's a squatty channel, it's a royal channel. They're going to talk about other stuff related to the royals too. You don't see that connection. I would give people this advice, whether they're watching or reading things from the BBC or other channels or other radio shows or podcasts or anything, Patreons, Vimeo, whatever your content source is, if you don't like what a creator is putting out, the first step is to ask yourself, why? And two, where can I find what I do want to watch? Because there are going to be days where I cover topics that you might not be interested in, but you still want to hear my feedback. Sure. Okay, great. But there may also be days where you want to hear what I have to say. Then great about that too. But how would you feel if you're engaging and enjoying a certain topic from a creator you follow and someone else is hounding them to stop talking about that because I don't want to hear about it? My personal opinion is this. If you are not the one creating the content, then you can't logically expect to align with everything that they present to you. Sometimes you do, but more often than not, you're going to see something here or there that just doesn't interest you in the same way. And I would say on those days that you take a chill pill and then you find content you want to watch that day, instead of attacking creators, platforms, media, whatever, about not showing something that you're not interested in, you should go find what you are interested in. Because it is very entitled to go to anybody or any show or whatever and be like, I don't want to see that, so you shouldn't show it. Who do you think you are? Unless you are creating the content, you do not have full control. And the level of entitlement that people seem to have these days is just off the scales. It's insane to me. Now, it doesn't happen to me anymore. And I think it's because YouTube was I don't want to say intentionally, but YouTube had a habit of pushing my content to people who did not like Sussex related content. And I got a lot of pushback. And I would be like, this is weird. Like, why are you watching then? Like, I pass 1,000,001 videos and thumbnails on YouTube that I don't want to watch until I get to the one that I do want to watch. I'm not going to stop and be like, I don't want to hear about your ski trip. Like, send. I'm like, not going to do that. I'm just going to pass it and be like, okay, girl, I'll listen to you when you're talking about something I want to hear about. I follow Prim's Hood Cinema. He's one of my favorite channels on YouTube. Prim's Hood Cinema is one. Kenny JD, Jamie French, they're all like some of my favorite channels. And sometimes Jamie French recaps movies. And sometimes she recaps a movie I've never seen, or maybe when I watched it, I didn't like. But guess what? Because I like Jamie French, I listen to it and I always enjoy it. But there are days that, like Prim's Hood Cinema, he recaps shows and movies and things like that. And some days I'm like, dang, I really wanted a movie recap. Guess what I do? I go look at one of his old movie recaps, one that I haven't seen in a long time, or I'll go look at something else. I don't stop and be like, you shouldn't have talked about Smart Guy today. Like, that is weird to me. And so the BBC responding is fine. But when you've been creating content for a certain amount of time, you start to just accept you are not ever going to please anybody. And because your content is curated from you, the goal isn't to please everybody. It's to please yourself and make sure you're happy with the type of things you're covering on your channel or on your platform or whatever. And so when people complain to the BBC about excessive coverage, I would have just ignored them. I wouldn't have responded, but you know, that's just me. I'm also not a news network. So again, they may have had to respond. Maybe they felt like the backlash was getting excessive, but yeah, they wouldn't have gotten a response out of me. I would have been like, okay, turn the channel, go to CNN, bitch. Why are you over here then? No, I'm just kidding. But I definitely wouldn't have responded. I would have just put out the content I wanted to put out. It is what it is. So anyway, I want to switch over to this topic. This is from the Intelligencer or NewYorkMag.com/Intelligencer. And it's an opinion piece. It's written by Abby Schreiber. Now, she is a member of the Royal Rota. She's a reporter. And she wrote an article titled, "What It's Like to Be a Member of the Royal Press Pack, Sussing Out Rumors and Avoiding Looking a Fool During the Kate Middleton Saga." Now, I find it to be quite interesting, but I'm going to move it down to these two paragraphs because it kind of gives you the meat and potatoes. It says, always at the back of anybody in the media's mind is the feeling that readers are going to say they're doing to her what they did to Diana in relation to Kate Middleton. The days of the British media just blindly ignoring requests from the palace are long gone. You have to ask yourself, quote, well, how did they get that picture? Did they chase the car? Then you cannot use that picture in that particular situation. And they're talking about Kate Middleton's photo in the car with her mom. In that particular situation, my personal view was that the papers and the broadcasters could have used those pictures of Kate with her mother. It was interesting that they didn't. Then they did use a picture of William with her in the car, which wasn't a very good picture. I mean, she was looking away. The only difference I could point it to is that William was on his way to an official engagement in the second picture, whereas in the first one, they were very much going about their private business. But of course, it didn't worry overseas media in the US particularly. So anyway, of course, the readers themselves are hypocrites. Oh, not her calling y'all out. Just about every person I've met in the last 3 months, whether they are ardent monarchists, strong Republicans, or just completely indifferent, have asked me, quote, so what's really wrong with Cade? And what about the king? What type of cancer he's got? The truth is, I don't think anybody in the media knew, but I think everybody thinks, oh, they really know what's going on. But we didn't. Sounds like a cop out, but let's continue. The royal press pack is quite a sensitive group of people, and it's a lot less brutal than the politics beat is. On a personal level, the members of the royal press pack will never be friends with William and Kate or the King and Camilla. Sometimes we might exchange a bit of banter or conversation, but we know we're never going to be their friends. Still, when the Mother's Day photo created that frenzy, I think a lot of the reporters genuinely felt for the couple. That's the problem. Y'all are damn near living a parasocial relationship with them, covering them, and now feeling like you're part of their world. You should have been reporting about the photo, not feeling anything regarding the photo. But let's continue. And I think quite a few people messaged the communications secretary at Kensington Palace and others to say, we feel for you and don't worry too much. That's the problem. That's why you guys in the UK, that's why y'all not getting very authentic stories. Here's why. This period took me back to the last days of the Queen and Prince Philip, when there were constant rumors like, oh, Prince Philip died. Can you ring the palace and check? As a special correspondent, you get absolutely fed up with it. You're tempted to just say, of course he hasn't died. Don't be ridiculous. But you're also worried that the one time you say that will be the one time that, gosh, crap, it really has happened. That happened to me with Prince Philip, where the news desk rang and said, some of the photographers seem to think that Prince Philip has died. And I nearly let fly and said, how many times are we going to have this? Then I thought, I better check. So I rang the Buckingham Palace switchboard and they said, the press office is not taking any calls. Can you email in? And I thought, yeah, there's definitely something up right now. The last weeks were similar. There was this frenzy day after day that the palace is going to be making a big announcement today, and all of us thinking, nobody's told us anything. But again, you don't want to look a fool if you're wrong. On the Friday they released Kate's video, I heard there was going to be an announcement, but I'd read that every other day as well. The British press was told by 3:30 or at 3:30, and that there's going to be an off-the-record briefing at 4 o'clock. Everybody was scrambling to make sure that they were by a computer and with a link to tune in. And so basically she goes on to say, honestly, a lot of nothing. But basically she goes on to talk about kind of the pitfalls of being part of the Royal Rota or just part of the Royal Press Pack and the ups and downs of that, and how even with the Kate saga, it just made things even worse, and how they're trying to toe a balance. And I encourage you to read the whole thing. It's kind of long and this is, our episode has already been pretty long, but I wanted to speak on this for a couple of reasons. Several times throughout, it almost felt parasocial. It felt less like reporting and more like a tag-along friend. And I think that is where the problem lies. I think that is where the issues lie, because it doesn't have to be two extremes. It doesn't have to be completely ignoring the palace and their updates, or, you know, believing everything they say. I think you can use, you know, logic. You can be conscious with everything you take in, and you can suss it out, and you can put out what you think. You can put out what you think is the truth, and you can do so in good faith. I don't think you have to take a moment, for example, the Mother's Day photo. You don't have to immediately feel anything for the couple, because what you should have felt as a reporter, in my opinion, is curiosity. You should have been sniffing for the truth, in my opinion. Again, I'm not saying feel nothing, because clearly something was wrong. So I could see why you would be like, okay, this makes me feel like something's off, and I am concerned about her. That's not the problem. It's when your concern for a public figure supersedes your role as a reporter. And that is a problem. Perhaps they need to rotate Royal Rota or Royal, the press pack, the members of the Royal Press Pack. Each agency and platform needs to rotate people who are directly covering the royals every couple of months, so that they don't have this attachment, and so that they are getting real authentic stories pushed back. Because it just seems like a bunch of hangers-on who aren't willing to tell the truth. They just want pretty pictures and a fun byline. And that's a problem. And I think that's how we ended up in the issues that we have now. I think that's also why so many of them took it personally when they didn't have the unlimited access to Harry and Meghan that they fully expected to have. They really wanted to be able to not only share their story and tell their story, but in some cases create their story. And I think that's why we saw such a visceral response when Harry and Meghan reasonably accommodated them, but did not do so extremely. They prioritized doing the work, taking care of home, taking care of one another, and having their child in a safe and healthy environment. And they applied appropriate boundaries while still accommodating them reasonably. And they took that so personally. And reading this article, I read through the whole thing earlier. It's kind of long, and it just gives a lot of different examples of the same point. But it just felt to me that the Royal Press Pack need to be rotated in and out, so that this attachment isn't something that's nurtured, because the attachment is where the issue is happening. It's permeating the stories that are being told, which means they're not being told in an unbiased fashion, nor are they being told fairly or honestly in some cases. And even when the Kate picture came out, the fact that it came out that it was a composite should have concerned people, but it absolutely should have been curiosity that was fueling the actions, the next steps and actions forward. And so this article kind of gave me a glimpse into what's happening. In my humble opinion, the people who are reporting on the royals need to take the Omid Scobie approach. He needs to brand like a term, like the Omid effect or something like that. I think they need to take the Omid Scobie approach. That man has had to field hate from random ass corners of the world because he's refused to attack the Sussexes. He's refused to go with the crowd. And I think when we're little, we see in school, we see all those informational videos and like those little like encouragement shows and episodes where they're like, you can, if you stand alone, as long as you're standing for what's right, it doesn't matter if you're standing alone. And I feel like over time, people have that message changed of, yeah, we get that you want to stand for what's right, but also could you just stand over here with us so that we don't feel like we're doing wrong? Even though we know we are, but we don't like the way it makes us feel when you don't stand with us, because we want everybody to want what we want and we want everybody to do what we do so that no one has the moral high ground. And so could you still do what we do? And if you don't, just don't speak out on what we do, because we don't want to feel bad about it. Yes, we want to harass this couple. Yes, we want to abuse them. Yes, we want to abuse their child. Yes, we want to follow them around and try to put them in unsafe situations. Yes, we want to call them liars. Yes, we want to gaslight them, but we really don't want to feel icky about it. So Omid, could you just kind of like join us? I feel like that's why he gets the hate he gets, because he's just like, this isn't what I signed up for. He even sat in the witness box to give testimony. So like he walks the walk and talks the talk. And I think that's intimidating to people, especially people who've built a career by being manipulative, by being shady, by kind of taking the bait and doing ill deeds, thinking, well, everybody's doing it. So why would I be the one that gets caught? So yeah, I may as well do this to advance my career. We read from bylineinvestigates.com that story of the reporter who says she was part of the team at News of the World who was targeting Prince Harry with false stories, and they were trying to pin drug use on him. And she posed as a member of a party he was at with kids who were much younger than her and was like going in the bathroom trying to find where cocaine could have been and trying to get little baggies and things like that so that she could write a headline that said, Harry at a party where cocaine was present. And she talked about how bad she felt about that. And I'm like, too little too late. You put that story out or whatever you contributed to it in the 90s. We are now in 2020 of the four. And you are just now acknowledging the wrong you're doing. How about the millions of other people who did exactly what you did and put all that on that young boy's shoulders? Are y'all supposed to just feel like, I feel good about it. I've repented because in 2024, after I've already built my career and made my money and lived my life, now I can repent for it. Now that I've gained all the benefits from it, I can repent for it. And then she didn't even give her name. She's still a coward. She's still being anonymous. Oh no, Harry didn't have the option of being anonymous when you were unfairly implicating him in drug use that he did not do. Now, what he did admit to was Louis. He got Louis, but and he had a little fun at Courtney Cox's house as an adult. And all of that can be read about in Spare. But did he get the chance to be anonymous after you intentionally tried to malign his name? No, he didn't. He had to live with that. He had to prove that he didn't do drugs. Do you know how humiliating that had to be for him? Especially with, do you know how it feels to be falsely accused of something? That is one of the most harrowing experiences you can have. I've shared this story before. When I worked at a company in Dallas, Texas called Andy Sprinkler, I was a receptionist. And then I was a customer service person. And then I was a trainer and all these other really cool things they let me do. But while there, one of my managers was inexperienced. Me and her were the same age, but she hadn't had a lot of corporate experience. And she really had managed people, especially people who were unlike herself. And it was evident, which was shared with me later as I got an apology from someone who was at the company at the time and is no longer there. And they were like, you know, we understand that there's a learning curve. There's a lot of maturation that needs to take place. So please be patient with us, but we'll do all we can to make sure that this doesn't happen. Because I was falsely accused of making a mistake. It was a very small mistake, but it had happened like several times in a row. And since I was like the last hired, I'd been there like 6 months. It was a mistake that I reasonably shouldn't have been making anymore. And I was making it a point to not make that error anymore. So when she came to me, when another girl came to me named Jessica and was like, hey, you're making this mistake again. Let me show you again. And she was acting irritated. I said, okay, now I'm going to say something because clearly you're so frustrated with having to repeat yourself, but I'm not the one doing this. So let me point this out to them. So I showed her in the notes where it was actually one of the company owners who was making this mistake. And she goes, I said, actually, this was him. So maybe just send him a reminder. He probably forgot. And she was like, okay, relax, calm down. I'm the only Black woman in the company. I'm not being rude. I'm just like, first of all, she was the one that was being rude. So when she said, calm down, I said, Jessica, I'm not upset. I'm just pointing this out to you. And she's like, fine, whatever. And walked off. About an hour later, Kelly comes over, who's my assistant manager, and she goes, can I show you something? She shows me the same thing. And I was like, yeah, okay, so great. I'm thinking now I can explain to her what was happening. So I show her the same thing. And I was like, so Kelly, Jessica just came to talk to me about this, and I want to show who did it. And I showed it to her, and she goes, well, you've been doing it a lot anyway, so let me just show you. And I was like, I already know. And I repeated it back to her, what the steps were. And she's standing over me, talking kind of condescendingly to me, right after Jessica had done it. And she was like, okay, Sharon, okay. And she just walks off. As a manager, what should have happened is her saying, oh, you know what? Thanks for pointing that out. We'll make sure we're doing our due diligence, but just make sure you fully understand. Can you show me one more time? Okay, great. I'm glad you pointed that out. We'll reach out to Matthew. Thank you. But that didn't happen. She got an attitude too. So I'm feeling very isolated. I'm feeling very attacked. Only for the manager, the full-on office manager, Jill, to call me into her office and say, I don't think you're happy here. I felt insane. I said, okay, well, I'm reasonably happy. This is a great job. I'm enjoying myself. She goes, yeah, but I feel like you've been very defensive. I'm getting reports from a lot of people. Child, it's 1, 2, 3. It's four other people in the office because it's a small office at this time. It's bigger now, but a lot of people is just not possible. So maybe several was the word. But she was like, are you happy here? And I was like, yeah, I'm happy. Is something wrong? Like, I'm a direct shooter, so it's weird when people use innuendo or hint or a roundabout passive aggressive way to talk to me. That actually will irritate me. Just tell me what's going on. I'm always happy to comply. And so she was like, well, we're getting the vibe. We're getting the reports that you are condescending and that you're defensive and that no one can say anything because, and this is verbatim what she said, anytime someone points out to you, anything out to you, you say, well, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. Imagine how you would feel getting mocked by your boss in a very disrespectful way. She mocked me. And I was sitting there like, this place is racist as hell. And working there. And so I challenged myself to overcome what I should have done was find a new job, because I'd come from a really good job, but it was so far away that I took this one and I thought I could make a great experience. But they were so hell bent on having a scapegoat in the office to bond further with one another that they really used me as a launch pad and they abused me in the process. And so I really didn't take to that mocking well. And so I said, well, I haven't observed myself do that. Can you give me an example of when I've done that? She said, well, I've heard. And I was like, oh, well, have you seen that? And she was like, the bottom line is when people give you feedback, blah, 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 blah. So I said, I'm taking the feedback, but I've been falsely accused of something. Is it not the right thing to do to point that out? I would say that the person who's defensive is the one who is being corrected and refuses to acknowledge it and walks off from me in a huff. I think that's pretty defensive. And she was like, well, I appreciate your feedback. So feel free to get back on the phone. Thank you so much for taking time to sit with me. And I got that in every review after that was, I'm defensive. I'm defensive. I'm defensive. And anytime I spoke up about anything, I was accused of lying or misunderstanding. I was gaslit when I was racially accosted several times. and I say that to say, being accused of something you're not guilty of, even in a small way, is hard, because for someone to believe something about you without evidence means that thing confirmed a bias that they already had. If you and I are friends and someone tells me you did something that I know to be completely out of your character or that I haven't seen for myself, I'm not going to believe it at face value. I might ask you about it, or I might just let that be something that was said that I neither validated nor invalidated. But if I believe it, but you haven't, with no evidence, and you have never shown that, that means I already held a bias against you. So the things you believe about a person really confirm what biases already exist. And so I say that to say, Prince Harry is this innocent young man doing nothing wrong. Well, I say nothing wrong. He was going through regular life and growth and stuff like that. But as a child, he's doing nothing wrong. He's trying to live his life in the best way possible in extreme circumstances. I don't think people really stop and think about what the kids of the royal family really go through. And I say that to say these reporters, these grown ass adults, took it upon themselves to accuse this young man of doing heinous things, things that could have really not only impacted him and did impact him, but his family as well, his future, his life, the reputation that would proceed without him. These people started the term thick. Well, they didn't start the term, but they started the idea that he's a thicko. That means he's not very smart. I would say the chief impact officer of BetterUp is quite smart, a lot smarter than these duds who were reporting on him. And a lot of this comes from them having a certain allegiance to other members of the family or needing to scapegoat someone else to protect members that they've aligned with or that they have this, like I said, parasocial relationship with. Well, I don't want people saying things about William. I really like William. We should try to target Harry. Like, that's the problem. This article did nothing but confirm what I already believed, is that the Royal Press Pack and the Rota are too close to the royal family. There needs to be an unbiased third party in the middle of them that needs to create checks and balances for the way they report on them, but what they report about them. They should neither be too agreeable or too contradictory to them. They should just report what is. And how do you create that regulation? That's what I'm curious about. We still struggle over here in the US all the time about that regulation. The press over here just takes a heavy hand, whatever you want to say. Look at Fox News. We as an American, you can't talk about anybody's media until you address Fox News. We have to deal with Fox News over here. They've lost all credibility, yet they have a big impact. That's dangerous. The media need, from globally, the media needs a good wash and dry. They need to be reset. And I think leaders in the industry, like Omid Scobie, like Byline Times, like Peter Jukes, I think people in the industry who try to go about it in an honest way and try to report on what's going on, not only with the Royals, but just current events and world matters in an honest way, in an unbiased way, and refuse to take the bait and abuse just for some clicks and some money. Those are the people we need to be putting on a pedestal so that they can lead the way. They are shining a light in the path that needs to be taken by everyone. And I want to do a deep dive. What's going on at journalism school? Like, what are they teaching? What's going on during the exit from journalism school or the graduation? Once you get your first job, what happens? Because you go in, I'm sure, thinking this industry runs a certain way, but then you get in there and you're propositioned with all these different side quests that lead to what we're leading to and what we're talking about right now. The fact that somebody even went on to say that I saw the composited photo. I knew it was invalid or inaccurate or inauthentic. And I still felt for them. Why are y'all, like, I get the kindness aspect, but why are y'all as the media calling people you're supposed to be reporting on fairly and honestly to offer your personal feelings, best wishes or whatever, when you should be reporting on what's going on? That definitely taints the way that you paint them. So when things come out that are truthful about them, you're less likely to cover the truth, which is why y'all tried to invalidate Spare the way you did, because it said things about the people you have a parasocial relationship with that you didn't like, and you wanted to invalidate the source. Mind you, the source is somebody who's related to these people, who has unmitigated access. Y'all tried to invalidate him. Anyway, what do y'all think about this article? Read the whole thing and share with me in the comment section what you think about it. But it was definitely revealing. I was like, yeah, you too concerned and you're not enough curious. Do your job. Okay, I have ranted in y'all's ear long enough. We are now at the last topic. And this is an article from InStyle that reads, King Charles reportedly has regrets about how he and Princess Diana raised William and Harry. Children all need boundaries, and I don't think they had too many. Tessa Patek wrote this. I'm going to read the article because I'm going to read it. And then I'm going to give you my opinion because this already irritated me. Because I think the implication I get from the headline is that instead of saying the things that he really, this is a narcissistic parent, what they love doing is like trying to own up to something, but they try to twist, very political, very politician. It's kind of like an interview. I'll say my faults, but they have to be positives. I regret how he and Princess Diana raised William and Harry. Instead of saying we should have made a healthier home, we should have made a healthier relationship with one another and with them, we should have been there to teach them and guide them through life's biggest changes. And I shouldn't have been cheating on their mother. We could start there. And when my son came to me for help, when members of my family were selling him out to the media and the media was abusing him and his wife, I should have helped him. I should have been there for him. You know, there's a lot we could say, but not about their boundaries. I think the boundaries that Harry's applying now are very healthy and necessary and should have been applied around him when he was a child. I don't think they needed more boundaries for them and their behavior. I think William and Harry both needed more boundaries around the access that was given to them from people that they didn't know or people who didn't wish them well. There's no reason those two boys should have been walking behind their mother's casket. So if you want to start with boundaries, start with that. Have y'all ever heard the story of why William and Harry were walking behind the casket? So it's reported that the reason Harry and William were both walking behind Princess Diana's casket when they should have been somewhere privately grieving their mother and being guided through the transition as young boys who needed her more than ever into living in a world without her, they were paraded around like show ponies at the worst moment of their life. And it was because, allegedly, Prince Charles knew that the public was not going to like seeing him after Princess Diana had died. And he was essentially public enemy number one. They foiled a lot after Princess Diana's death, with staying, you know, they didn't come home immediately. They didn't address the public immediately. People were calling for the queen to release a statement, and they were very upset with her. They were very upset with Charles. They also knew that Charles had been cheating on her, as we know, when they were married. At the point that she died, it was almost a year after they had officially divorced. But according to the public, he was the worst person in the world. And then for her to die, this beloved woman who doesn't even seem of this world, people directed that anger at his ass, and he didn't want to deal with that. So he deployed his two children to walk with him behind her casket so that they could essentially be meat shields, that he felt people would feel too bad seeing William and Harry so they wouldn't attack and boo him. His ego put his kids in a situation that they would never emotionally recover from. And obviously, Charles Spencer walked behind the casket, Diana's brother, her baby brother, and the sibling she's the closest to. And Prince Philip heard about Charles's decision and said, well, I'm not going to let my grandsons walk alone. So he walked with them too. He wasn't originally supposed to. Had they not had that kind of support, the support of their uncle Charles and the support of their grandfather, it would have made it that much worse. But if it had been left up to Charles, they would have been meat shields for his ego, when he too should have been grieving the loss of his first wife, someone he had children with. He was too busy thinking about his own reputation. But anyway, let's get into the article and to find out what boundaries he felt he needed to apply. Because if he was going to apply any boundaries, it should have been that day. King Charles doesn't live by the no regrets sentiment and would do some things differently if given the chance. And like many parents, that applies to the king's parenting style. Charles reportedly wishes he had been a little bit more strict when raising sons, Prince Harry and Prince William, according to royal biographer Ingrid Seward. Now, notice something intentional. Patreon, y'all can see this, but I'm going to call it out for you guys on the podcast. When raising sons, Prince Harry and Prince William. Now, hear me when I say this. In no other circumstances does Prince Harry come before William. They are always so serious about the birth order and the line of succession and protocol, and they love with the Prince William and Prince Harry. Sometimes they don't even say Prince Harry. They'll say Prince William and Harry or Princes William and Harry. They rarely put Harry first, and they especially don't put Harry first as Prince Harry and Prince William. But notice when it's time to critique them as people and their behavior and criticize them in some way, oh, Harry is first, forever playing the meat shield for egomaniacs in his family. I don't see how he dealt with it. I would have knocked somebody upside the head by now. Oh, wait, he did hit that photographer. You kind of had that coming. Listen, I don't condone violence, but that photographer who Harry knocked him a new one. He can't say he didn't earn that. You earned that. And you better be glad it ended at that, because he's the looks on his face in those photographs, he looked like he could have gone for a good stomping you out. And you deserved it. Get out that baby face. Okay, anyway. Quote, Prince Harry and King Charles were very, very close. Pause. We already read Spare, and we know that that's not true. How are you going to tell us something that the guy you're talking about has already told us from firsthand knowledge? Y'all see why they get on my nerves? Let's continue. Quote, they got on incredibly well. I think Charles probably regrets that he wasn't strict with Harry and William. Again, Harry's first when it's time to criticize. And secondly, there's a lot of probably in this. Did Charles tell you that? Charles might think he did a fine job going away for days at a time and leaving his kids to his mother and father and all of their uncles and aunts and, of course, all of their servants and help. He probably thinks he did a great job. How do you know? You're just assuming. Anyway, the author and editor-in-chief of Majesty magazine added that Charles mostly just followed along with his late ex-wife Princess Diana's freestyle of bringing up children. This is the biggest rewrite of history. They get on my, this is why it's important to always call it out. First of all, Diana was actually accused of being too strict with her sons, particularly Prince William, because she knew that he would have a lot of access and a lot of people kissing his ass. And she wanted him to be a good person, a well-mannered person, and a thoughtful person. Read Diana, her true story. She went out of her way to try and impart values on her sons, something that the royal family actually resented that she did. They hated that she took them, a lot of them, not everybody, but a lot of them hated that she took them on those mission trips where they would actually interact with people and they didn't just stick to like walking in the background at walkabouts. They hated that she had them working during the summer and giving and making philanthropy a big part of their life. People hated that she did that. They said that at the time the word wasn't woke, but basically they were like, she's too modern. The princes don't need to be doing all that. She was very intentional about the way she raised them. She did all she could to raise them. And as a matter of fact, I think it's very funny that they say that Diana was too, freestyle, when she was literally lambasted for weeks for spanking Prince William. Mind you, there are literal videos of William just being an absolute ass to Charles, punching him in the head repeatedly, snatching a dog from Harry, snatching a rabbit from Harry. But Diana's the one who was willing to spank him and take all the ridicule. And also, since Charles is allegedly recapping and regretting things from his parenting, why did he leave and go to a music show or an opera on the day that Prince William had to have surgery on his skull? Left the hospital to go to a fun engagement for days, an overnight trip while his son was having surgery on his skull. And he lied to Queen Elizabeth about it. He told Queen Elizabeth that the injury was minimal. It wasn't a big injury. And then she found out from Diana how serious the surgery was. And she was pissed about it. She was furious. You want to talk about parenting, y'all? I'm not going to be going. Y'all don't have time to be listening to me for no two more hours. Okay, quote. Oh, they need to stop this lying. Okay. Diana allowed them to do more or less what they wanted, which was very fashionable in those days. You let children just get on with things. I think Charles probably regrets that he wasn't a bit stricter because it might have been both boys. It would have given both boys more boundaries. Children all need boundaries, and I don't think they had too many. You don't think because you don't know. And you want to know why you don't know? Because you aren't in the family, and you clearly didn't read any firsthand account from either of these people, nor watch any videos or do any research at all. Because if you had, you would have realized that Princess Diana was a very intentional parent. As a matter of fact, during her divorce, the biggest issue to her was how much time she got to spend with her boys. That was the most important issue. Time with her boys and bringing them up right was paramount. She even talks about that when one of her very close friends passed away from I think it was either AIDS or HIV. When they were passing away, she made sure to bring her sons to see him, connect with him, to spend time with him, but to not have stigma or fear around the stigma of HIV or AIDS. She wanted them to see him as a human and in his humanity so that they could grow up and connect with people on a human level and not see themselves as better or separate. She was a very intentional parent. She did right by those boys. And the fact that people are trying to rewrite that story really makes me mad, because if there was one thing that you can say about Diana, is she was a damn good mother. She made a point to say that. I have read several books about her, but I read her memoir. And that was the one thing that was consistent throughout. Half the decisions she made were against her best interests, but were in the best interests of her sons. And so that's how she operated. So to see them take, how are y'all not stopping this yet? Why are y'all still attacking her? And you know what? Here, let me say this too before I go. Charles has never lived out or outlived his jealousy of how popular Princess Diana was. I don't believe he has. Now, obviously, I don't know either of them, so I can't say for sure. But back in the day, he was very jealous of how much attention and how much love Princess Diana received. He was very jealous, very egomaniacal, and allegedly. And that was a really big deal to him to get all the attention. So she, a lot of times, especially in the beginning of their marriage, played herself down, and she tried to just kind of follow the rules and kind of hide in the background. Doesn't that sound familiar, y'all? And then she kind of said, no, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. I need to connect with people. I need to work. I need to be a member of this family, and I need to do my job. And I can't do that if I'm catering to his ego. And you see her, the more she's in tune with herself as a woman, the more she blossoms and the more she stops allowing his antics to affect her. The more that she kind of walks in the Princess of Wales title, and she connects with people, and she really comes into her own as a mother. that's not something you can take away from her. And I'm sorry, but Charles, this little competition you still have with Diana, or this could be you, Camilla. This smells like you as well. It needs to stop. The one thing you cannot take away from people is how Diana made them feel. And people who lived throughout her time on this earth and people who have researched her who were not here when she was here know one thing about her. She was a damn good person, but more importantly, she was a damn good mother. And trying to paint her as anything but is wrong. I also want to say this too. If you want to talk about things you could have improved with parenting, you probably could have been around a lot more. But no, your ass was at Highgrove with your mistress, the mistress who is now your queen consort. So why don't you focus on why you weren't as present as you should have been because you were chasing tail, and focus less on demonizing a woman who was literally an angel on earth. Charles, every time I think you've turned a corner, you remind me that you are still that same old jealous egomaniac that you always have been, blaming mommy and daddy for not fully developing into a real human being. And that's why your reign gonna be short, unfortunately. God bless you and your illness. And I hope that, you know, you get the treatment you deserve and you have the day you deserve. And I hope that you recover and all that stuff. But I'm gonna just be honest, trying to implicate Princess Diana in anything, it really shows you for who you are. And whatever little bit of sympathy you got from your diagnosis is about to be out the window. I think you are still vastly underestimating how much the world loves Princess Diana. I think you are. And I think you're vastly underestimating how much the world loves Prince Harry as well. Clearly. And you know what? I don't think he's underestimating it at all. As a matter of fact, I think he knows exactly how much they are loved. And that's why he's trying to throw them under the bus, because he's still jealous about it. Isn't that a shame, y'all? Y'all, I have sat here and talked to y'all for an hour and 34 minutes. I'm not going to do this many subjects next time. Next time I'm going to do like two or three. This is way too many topics. Sorry, y'all. So anyway, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much to everyone who has been listening to the podcast. We are at 8,100 downloads. Thank you so much. Next time I'm going to do my bun for y'all on Patreon. I can't believe I came on here with my workout bun. At least you can see how I go to the gym. I'd be looking a mess. But anyway, thank y'all so much for listening along on the podcast. I hope you're enjoying it. And thank you to those of you who are watching along on Patreon. I hope you saw my note of gratitude that I posted for you guys on Patreon. I really appreciate you supporting the platforms where I'm being housed and all of the transitions we've had to make. And I appreciate that y'all ride with me through it. And also, Queen Verda Sanchez, I saw you pop up on Podbean and you now follow the podcast. Thank you so much. Y'all know I love me some Verda Sanchez. This might be my podcast, but this is her world. And so thank you so much for all the support from everyone. It's been great to see everybody make the transition over to the podcast. And I've gotten some really good feedback from being on here. So I really appreciate it. So that's all I have for y'all today. I hope you enjoyed this podcast or this Patreon video. And I will see you next time. Bye. Everybody, welcome back to the Sharing and Sade podcast.